Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where frontline sales leaders teach you how to build and scale an outbound sales team. Welcome back to the Predictable Revenue Podcast. I'm your host, Colin Stewart. Today, I'm joined by Kyle James. He's the VP of Sales over at Zentap. Kyle's going to talk to us about presence, about how to cultivate it, and how to show up on sales calls. Kyle, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for having me, Colin.
So I love when we were talking about, like, you know, what do you do over at Zentap? The way that you describe your role. Do you remember how you had sort of mentioned it?
Here's how I mention it now. I don't know if it would be the same as them, but I think it's kind of helping people to achieve their goals, right? And I think that's the biggest thing. There's a lot of stuff that goes into that, but above all, if people aren't achieving their individual goals, it's tough for us to achieve a team goal. So I think those two things go hand in hand.
I love it. And throughout the conversation, you know, it kept coming back to sort of how do I as a sales leader keep people engaged and aware of like what their purpose is, like aware of why they're here.
Yeah. That's I think purpose is huge. For me, it is, at least. I can speak to that. I think a constant reminder of what ultimately we're trying to solve, what problem we're ultimately trying to solve, and who is the beneficiary of that. And what is the purpose of our purpose, right? You know, I think that's critical. And if we can remind ourselves of that, it's easier to get through the hurdles that inevitably come with like a sales role or any job or just life in general.
So why do you think it's so important to keep people aware of staying present?
Because it can be hard if you're in the wrong frame of mind. You know, I don't think sales in general is a very hard thing. I don't think cold calling is a very hard thing inherently if we look at it in comparison to other things that we go through in life. But if you're in the wrong headspace because of other things that are going on in life, then those can be very, very difficult things and undesirable things. And, you know, we work in a startup, so there's changes, there's different things that impact people and their emotions, and there has to be some type of focus and emphasis on why we endure these things and why it's important that we persist instead of give up, and why it's important that we continue to believe in ourselves and what we're doing versus the alternative.
Mm-hmm. And I like the way you phrase it, just around like spreading consciousness to others.
Yeah.
And I'm curious about like this, this doesn't feel like something where you just read a bunch of books. Like I'm curious. There's gotta be like that moment where like, you know, Luke Skywalker finds his parents or his aunt and uncle's like barn or farm burnt down or something. Like talk to me about like, you know, sort of the origin story of this mindset. Like, how did you develop this? Where did this come from?
Failure, failing myself, failing people that I love and that love me, not being the best person that I could be, not maximizing my potential. And I think for me, it was just a journey that, you know, through the early to mid 20s, teenage years, I wasn't the same person that I am now. I had the same heart, I had the same, you know, ambitions to want to be successful, but I went about it in a completely different way. I wasn't aware of the things that I am today that allow me to be happy, that allow me to be able to focus relentlessly on what it is that I'm trying to achieve. I'm by no means, I wouldn't say successful on my journey yet, but it's definitely progress versus that. So I would say failure is really the only way that I think most of us, I don't know, at least for me, failure was the only thing that sunk into me of like, all right, you're humbled now. What do? You know, do you indulge in the negativity that led you there more, or do you change your life and accept that your way of perceiving the world and going about your day-to-day basis and, you know, unwillingness to sacrifice, you know, how you go about life, is that leading to success or not? And for me, it clearly wasn't at a certain point. And I just had to make that change and turn around. And so it was pain and failure that led there. And I read The Power of Now. My dad sent me the book. I've read it like 8 or 9 times since. That's why I laughed when you said, you know, probably just wasn't reading a whole bunch of books, but to some extent it was.
But I mean, you have to, I think it's the difference between just reading a book and like absorbing a book. And I think the difference there is the mindset of reading the book and the reason why you're reading the book, right? True. If you don't want to change, if you don't believe any of this shit and you're just like reading the book because somebody told you to read the book, you're not going to get any value out of it.
Very true.
If you had something that's gone on in your life and you're like, I need to fix this, I'm looking for solutions, I'm in like, You know, I'm not like even keel buyer mode. I'm in like growth mode or pain mode, right? And I'm like, I got to get something done.
Right.
That's when you're more open to and be like receptive to things that fundamentally change the way we look at things. So that's what I meant by that comment.
Very true.
You can't just read your books. You've got to actually be open to that change.
That's 100% right. Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And that's what it was. I finally got in that place where I had an eagerness to learn, right? You know, in school, I think, and I don't know, maybe it's like a lot of people, but in high school and things like that, I wasn't really too interested in like formal education. And today I love it, right? You know, I think, and I think anybody, you know, like that's dabbled in sales, I think that's kind of a lot of people, that's kind of a theme. And, you know, but at some point it really hit me, and I just like started to get a thirst for like wanting to learn more. And I think the main I could attribute that to probably failure more than I could say like any spark inside of me that I was just like, you know, today I want to be successful, you know?
So, totally. Yeah. It's the fear is a much more powerful motivator, isn't it?
Very much so.
Yeah.
Very much so.
Yeah. I can say like, I read a ton of books, and it's, you know, I've always had this sort of growth mindset, but it's recently in the last sort of 7 years, I've stepped it up a notch, because I'm like, I realize every 3 months I suck up my job again because the company's growing, and I'm like, well, time to like hunker down and figure out what I'm terrible at this time. And so you just keep like stacking these like 3 month increments on top of each other, and eventually you get a little bit better.
I can relate. Yeah.
Cool. And so for the rest of the podcast, you're actually going to lead us through a Kundalini yoga exercise, right?
Okay.
Like 45 minutes of like meditation and
do some breath of fire.
You betcha.
No, I'm not quite there yet. I'm not quite instructor level on that. These days I only make it in like once every few weeks or a month, but whenever I run into a really tough situation and I'm starting to catch myself being more emotional, egoic about it. You know, I can sense myself getting frustrated instead of processing it and saying, here's what the situation is. Here are the options on how to resolve it. If I feel myself getting riled up on, you know, or getting too adhered to like my point of view versus being open to the view of others, I know it's about time to go hit a Kundalini yoga studio. And usually, literally, it's like ritually every single time at the end of it, I always have a breakthrough of some sort. It renews my energy level, renews my ability to be able to focus. I feel better. I get clarity around the situation. I start to smile more. It's like all that good stuff that allows me to get back to being my real self. But every once in a while, I got to go in there. And if I had the time, that's a kind of a BS statement and excuse, but you can create time. But eventually I will go back to doing it every day.
Right on. No, Kundalini, I haven't done much yoga. I've done some, but my wife always just, whenever she was going to yoga, it's like, are you going to the serious yoga or like the silly yoga? She's like, I'm going to the silly yoga. Cause you like, it's more dancey, like at least her, right. At her yoga place. I'm sure there's a name for it, but I'm drawing a blank, studio. She was like,
the hot yoga.
No,
hot
just like
cool too. That's tough. It's really tough, but yeah, it's fun too.
Yeah, that seems like let's do something hard and let's make it real intense.
It is real. It is intense, man. And it's crazy because the first time you go in there, it's very humbling. Like, you know, there's people 60, 70 years old, especially as a male. And, you know, I mean, it's not becoming quite as much so, at least in LA, where it's like, but it's usually female dominant, right? And
yeah.
You know, when there's 65, 70 year old women and they're just smoking you and, you know, you can't keep up. And it's like, it's a different type of strength and a different type of persistence that you have to make it through those classes. So it was humbling to me. That's tough. But Kundalini is like more of a, for clarity and for purpose. I think it's definitely a way to tap into that, at least for me personally. I think it's powerful.
Totally. And I think how this relates is like, sales can be such a head game. And I think it's easy to, for like, you know, if you've done construction before, like I used to hang drywall and like, I used to have like insane shoulders just because all I was doing is just like, you pick up an eight or 10 foot sheet of drywall, carry it over by yourself. You lift it up and then somebody would hammer it in. It's like, repeat. And that was like physically exhausting, but being on 8 hours of calls is also exhausting. It's a different kind of exhausting. You get home, you're like, I just want to veg on the couch, right? Mm-hmm. It's so easy to get to, you know, fall out of the habit of like sharpening the saw, of taking that like active recovery almost.
That's a really good point, man. It's like, And I think it matters so much, like how well you take care of yourself, and to be able to sustain that energy and sustain that focus over that amount of time, and this time of year, sustain the health and all these different things. Those are hard things to do. I mean, it's very easy to get physically burnt out if you're, you know, not taking care of yourself, eating the right things, you know, treating yourself well. It's like a tough thing to do, and to some extent, it's inevitable that, you know, we can't go hard all the time and be focused and on our A game all the time. But yeah, I mean, it's pivotal, I think, to stay mentally clear and as healthy as possible. It allows you to make more money if you're in the game of sales, that is.
For sure. And if you can kind of keep that clear headspace where you recognize that there's sort of that gap between like, you know, something happening and like how I react.
Very much so. Absolutely. Yeah.
But I find the more like stressed I am, the more overburdened, the more overworked, the less sleep I have, the faster I forget all those good habits.
Correct. Yeah. It's definitely true, especially when you're running on like little sleep. Those days are interesting though. Sometimes it's a good day to like really, you have to re-engage yourself. It doesn't come quite as easily to stay focused. So I think to some extent you can lengthen that attention span and ability to focus by having to double down and like further concentrate your efforts and still pull through at that same performance level. So the next time you get rest, it's like, wow, it feels exceptionally easy. It's like, I don't know. So it's good to throw a wrench in there every once in a while when you can't sleep and just see how well you can come in and do the next day. You know,
you're totally right. I remember my first office job and working 8 hours, and I was like, come home, I'd be exhausted. And then a couple jobs later, I was pulling like 14 and 16 hour days in the office. I was like, damn, like you'd get to like lunchtime. You're like, this is half, like I've already worked 8 hours and this is half of my day. And it made 10 hour days feel like nothing at all.
Yeah. I think like the attention span is like a muscle, like anything else. You can't run 5 miles when we haven't been to the gym for a couple months, but you can build it back up incrementally over time. And I think that's what the purpose of meditation is to elongate, at least for me, other than like clarity and all those other more like ethereal things, the ability to elongate and intensify focus is the number one thing. And that's where I think the parallel is into sales. If that, the more inside of the call we are, like the more we're able to focus on what the prospect is saying and, you know, take active notes, whether it mentally or literally, and be able to be focused enough to reiterate those things when it comes down to connecting what they're ultimately seeking to the product that you're offering. It requires a lot of focus, and it's so easy, especially when you like learn the sales process or the product really well, to just go on autopilot and recite through the same old rebuttals and the same old scripting. And I think that comes through on some level to the person on the other end of the phone. So the ability to focus in that moment is critical.
Totally. I'm going to distract us for a half second here because I read this book last year, Why We Sleep. And in it, so a phenomenal book. I haven't talked about it in a while, but it was one of my favorite books that I read last year. I bought it for everybody in my life that was like, you need to read this book. It's amazing.
I'm going to put that down on my notes.
Okay. Yeah. And in it, they talked about a study, and it was, they were testing sleep deprived humans. And one of the first things like one of the first mental capacities that went when you're sleep deprived was your ability to read faces and understand the context of like the inflection in the, to infer emotion from facial expressions and body language.
So we like cast false judgments or like project what we believe on people because we're not really paying attention to.
Yeah. Your ability to like actually read somebody's face gets worse and worse and worse, the more, like the less sleep you have. And like, yeah, it like if you, especially if you're running a long-term sleep deficit. Anyway, another one of those pieces where like you got to cultivate the right mindset, you got to treat your body well and like give yourself the right amount of sleep. But I like how you referred to it as sort of showing up on the sales calls, because this is not just something that can exist in your personal life. This is something we got to bring into the office. So I'm wondering, how do you indoctrinate people into like the school of Kyle James, you know, at an office? Because I don't imagine you can just only hire sales reps that have the exact same mindset as you. This is something that's got to be grown and developed. Yeah, you got to fail, you got to fuck up, you got to learn. So like, how do you bring this mindset and sort of onboard somebody to this mindset within the workplace?
So really, I think, you got to get to know them, right? You got to get to know what people care about. And also watch the approach of not making sure, me personally, I have to make sure that I'm not pushing my beliefs onto other people. Because even if they're brand new, first day, just started, you know, first or second or third, no matter how, like, they're, how, you know, new they are to the company, doesn't matter. I can't assume that my way of viewing the world is the best thing for that person. All I can do is just suggest things that have worked for me in specific situations and then let them run with it. And then if that sparks some curiosity and it leads them to ask a question, or it leads them to, you know, dive a little bit deeper into how, you know, then I'm happy to help. But I think first thing is I got to get to know them, figure out if there is a problem, you know, what is the problem from their perspective, what's worked with me for me personally, or what I've seen from others on solving that problem, and then let them take it and run with it.
So love that. When you're working with like one-on-one with the sales rep, what are some of the things that we can do like to help them cultivate a present attitude? Right. And I remember you started with the RVP or RPV framework. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. So, I read a book called The Innovator's Dilemma and its sequel, The Innovator's Solution. And it talked in there about Michael Christensen's, I think, is the author. It's a great book. And it talked about defining an organization is comprised of resources, processes, and values, right? And how those three things fit together define what an organization is. And so we're in just now getting ready to turn two at Zentap. And so we're a young company, things are going well, but we still are defining processes. And, you know, a lot of things that are assumed, like, especially, you know, you're in a sales organization, the things that are inherent, like, okay, we use Slack, you know, we use Whitetails or Dialer, you know, but where is the listed of all these resources on paper? And what are the processes that use these different resources in order to create an end goal that is more valuable than any of those things individually, right? In, you know, defining the values is in what I'm in the process of trying to do right now. And that's probably the most difficult thing, because I think the book describes it as it's the criterion by which we make decisions, right? Defining our value. They don't always have to be ethical in tone, but, you know, how do people in this company make decisions when it comes to very specific parts of our processes? And I think that those things have to be defined in order to create people that are truly independent within their role and thinking critically, instead of just, you know, looking to others to answer a question when they can answer the question themselves if others have thought through things enough to define the values, and then not mandate the values, but put those values out in the open for everyone to debate. Like, is this even true? Just because I write it down on paper doesn't make it true. You know, there's numerous times I put something down on paper and somebody's like, are you sure about that? And, you know, it doesn't matter who it comes from, an SDR, you know, AE, you know, our CEO, there's numerous times where I'm wrong, and it may take me a second to realize that. I think it's the collective defining that RPV framework is what we're trying to do right now. We're doing it. And I don't know if it's something that you're ever really finished with though. So, mm-hmm.
And you're totally right. It has to be something that is lived and not just talked about.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah.
Patrick Lencioni has a really good article. I want to say it's an HBR article on sort of values. And I read it as part of this like EOS traction piece that we're going through. But they talked about, you know, are these like table stakes values? Like, is it something that you would say, you know, this is something that everybody that works for any company would say, like, to
right.
be honest, you know,
right,
honesty, right? Yeah. Or is it an aspirational value, right? Like right. everybody should be left-handed,
right?
You know, like, or learn how to write with their left hand. I don't know, like something silly like that,
right?
You know, or is it like an actual core value and something that you're going to use to hire and like make hiring and firing decisions,
right?
And so, does like where does this sort of presence and mindfulness sort of fit into that framework?
I think in really becoming one, so to speak, with what the culture actually is right now, like you talked about there, of like you could write most of these things from their current state or from their aspirational state. But I think the first thing that we want to do is define what is currently in place, right? Once everything's been defined as where we're at now and all of its imperfections, right? It can be painful writing out the way that things really are if they're not the best in one particular area. But then we can put it side by side with where we want to get to and try to get there. And it can take a long time to do that. It's tough to get everybody that has an impact on those type of decisions and those type of overall more macro directions in the same place at the same time. But it's totally worth it for the fact of having unification and people and solidarity of people working towards one clear direction. And it's something that I'm pretty passionate about trying to create right now and hope to get better at it as we go.
Yeah, because I guess as a leader, you really want to set the tone. And if you don't define what the tone is, it can just sort of vary from leader to leader.
Very much so. Yeah. I mean, that's definitely true. And I think that if we can build in people's individuality within a more macro framework, it can prevent individual opinions from conflicting from creativity, right? Because I think the number one reason why it should be created is not to define every single aspect of every person's job from a sense of trying to get people to conform to a mindset, but to put down a context so that people don't have to use their brain power to mull over the smaller details and can think from a more higher level and see the system that's in place, help shift that decision, that system, in the direction that they see, and then have a process in place to be able to enable that person to do that. And, checks and balances to make sure that, no one person, even, myself, anybody, the CEO, COO, is fully in control of every single aspect of it. So it's got to be something that everybody comes in with input upon and helps build and helps create. And I think that's a good way to get adoption, at least.
Right on. And you're right. It can't just be it can't be one person. It generally starts with the founders because they tend to have been there first. Just sort of the natural founding of a company sort of process. But you're right. It's there are certain values that will, maybe you started your company based on those values, but the way that the company evolved, you're not able to, say you're a fashion brand and you only hire, and the core group is 20-year-olds that are super trendy, right? You're not going to be able to build a super large company, with HR and recruiting and manufacturing if you're only hiring sort of 20-year-olds that are super trendy.
Right. So yeah.
It's got to be something that's not just aspirational and not just one of those founding values that got you there. It's got to be something that's going to be reflective of the entire culture.
Very much so. Yeah. That's a great point.
Right on, man. And so we start with the RVP framework. And so you're defining, here's what the values are. Here's how we sort of build this sort of presence and this mindfulness into the onboarding. Let's zoom into, the first couple of weeks. What does that look like for new SDR in terms of the sort of, how do you layer in the, making sure they're developing this mindset?
Great question. So when we first come in, we want to just define the basic resources that are in play. Hi, I'm Kyle, VP of Sales. I'll be helping with some of your training. Here's Joel. Here's, Ayal, who's our VP of Client Success. Here's David Duell, CEO. Just let them know who the people are and all the people that's going to be working with them, right? And then also speak to a little bit of the values of, who we are. This very high level, right? Very we believe that it's a progressive culture and that we have to, at this phase of where the company is at, be willing and able to accept change. And that change is the one thing that will be constant in a company of this size. And we want to, make sure it's important to us to make sure that we let everybody know that and try to make sure that we do a good job of letting everybody know that, so that there's no surprises if changes need to be made in order for the company to go in the right direction. So we want to try to lay out some of those things from the jump. And then after we've kind of talk from the resources and the values from a high level, then we start to kind of dive in a bit into the processes as well too. So, a few resources that may precede that, talking about terminology, key messaging points to make sure that there's messaging alignment from SDRs to AEs to client success, account management, the whole shebang, that everybody's kind of explaining the value to the client based on their goal and the job that they need done in the same way, and that there's alignment on that. Then we start to get into the most you know, core of the processes, which is booking a demo for us, right? So we go over scripting. We have them, you know, do read-throughs on the scripting. We talk about the psychology behind the scripting, right? Like why the script was designed in the way that it was designed. We do a little bit of role play. We do a CRM overview, keeping it very basic as far as the basic input and data entry that we need to complete in order to do a good job. We talk a lot about the client personas, right? And talk about the five different client personas that we have and how we speak to each of these different personas and making sure that we're speaking to what their business needs are and not what our product does, right? And then after we've defined all these things, we want to get them on the phone pretty early for us, at least. By the end of the first day, we want them to get their first 10 to 15 calls out of the way so that there's not that big elephant in the room that's, you know, making them a little bit more anxious. And then it allows us to give context around what they're actually doing when we're training. So we'll put them on the phone a little bit, go back off the phone. Okay, so here's what happened on that call. What was your perspective on it? Okay, here's what you could have done maybe a little bit differently. Give that a shot. And then we're making these micro, improvements systematically throughout the journey, and also getting a chance to assess each of the SDRs, AEs, or whomever it is that we're training in real time and see who it is that we're dealing with and where their strengths lie, where their weaknesses are, and then kind of be able to tailor a little bit of the training that we do to the individual that we're working with.
So I love the process there. And then, so at what point do you, because I remember you mentioned at a certain point, you sort of gently suggest, hey, The Power Now is a book you might want to check out.
Yeah. So there might be some reps I still haven't done that for, so I need to do that. But I would say after we get through the first month is when there needs to be something more, because you can get a feel for the company, the product, the sales process. All right, and then real life, and then the excitement wears off, and it's real life. You got to make those 100 calls, right? You've got to overcome personal life hurdles and, you know, show up at work and you know, persist through adversity. You'll have good days, you'll have bad days. So in those moments when I could see that people are struggling, when I'm on top of my game, that's the key word, I'm spotlighting that. You know, body language, how do they feel? We've got some great people on our team that can spotlight it when I can't, right? We have AEs that care about each other, and we'll say, hey, I think Joe's down a little bit right now. You know, he just seems like, you know, not really himself. He's struggling. You might want to, you know, have a one-on-one with him. And, my job is to make sure that I created the time to get with that individual, figure out what's going on. And then if it naturally comes up, like they're fixated, I could tell on their past performance, or they're nervous about a quota that's coming up. They're hyper, like very stressed out about a quota that they're not quite in alignment yet coming up and that impacting their future in some way. In those moments, if I'm on top of my game, then I would suggest that The Power of Now would be a good solution for that, or that, you know, maybe they hit a Kundalini yoga class or a hot yoga class, detach from their current process, get back core with just being in the moment right now and realizing, hey, we're breathing, right? You don't hit quota, life's not going to end, you know? Doesn't even mean necessarily that someone's going to be fired. There could be numerous reasons why somebody doesn't hit quota that go on, right? You know, a lot of times people thinking that they won't hit a quota impacts more of the reality than, you know, their own performance. So I think it's just based on situational, but ideally we start to focus on some of those more core things about month one on out. I wouldn't say core things. They would be more like culture building things, personal development type of things. And to be honest too, I just share a lot of, you know, what I'm doing. And if people ask questions, then I'll also kind of go a little bit more in depth on that if they want. You know, sometimes I probably talk too much, so as you can probably tell.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't say you talk too much, but it does sound like it's a light touch. It sounds like you're not super preachy about it. Like you have this mindset, you're going to live by these values. And when you see somebody that's struggling or in one of those like learning moments, that you might be able to grasp that and say, hey, you know, feels like you're stuck on this. I think this book would really help you out.
Yeah, when I'm pretty passionate, and I can tend to, I guess my kryptonite would be is that I can get so enthused and excited about one thing and get obsessive over one thing that I'm really in love with, even the job, right? And I've noticed that one of my biggest faults is that I get so intensely passionate about things that sometimes people feel like that they can't come to me if their problem is not in alignment with something that my vision is, because of maybe how I might perceive that, or maybe I wouldn't be able to relate, or I definitely don't want to be one of those leaders that mandates how certain things should and need to be done. And so I just have to be cautious and make sure that I don't get too preachy in, for instance, like in morning meetings and stuff. Like sometimes I can over talk it, and I need to not over talk it and make sure that other people are talking and that they're expressing what's going on. And that's where I get my best ideas from. It's not from me, you know, running off at the mouth about, you know, some philosophy that I wrote down 10 minutes prior, you know? So it's like,
yeah.
It just depends on how on top of my game I am, as to how I can best help somebody else. So that's where I look at it from my perspective. My job is to be on my game and be focused enough as to what's really going on and not my perception on what's going on, so that I can try to spotlight some of these things before they become problematic. And sometimes I fail. So
sometimes you fail too.
Yeah.
And it's sort of the, to bring it back to the power of now, basically sort of the three things, and I'm looking up here like I'm trying to remember, but I've actually pulled it up in front of me on a
okay.
on a summary. But I did read the book, but it was a long time ago. And, yeah. and the sort of three key lessons that I remember were sort of that life is just like a series of like present moments.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
And so when
nothing's
you're not,
ever existed in the past or future.
Exactly. All we have is like, it's right now. And then, you know, me snapping a few seconds ago, that like, that's history. All we have is right now.
Yeah.
And then the second piece is all pain is just resistance to things you can't change.
Or that you haven't accepted.
Exactly.
That was mind blowing to me. Like I literally, where it like blew my mind was like, when I realized when they were talking about like depression is caused by, you can only be depressed if you're thinking about the past. You can only have fear or anxiety if you're thinking about the future. And I was like, it's crazy. Like, I was like, I've lived my entire life thinking about the past or the future. That's when it hit me.
Yeah.
Every day I was always thinking about what I was going to do next. So then it got me curious to start training my mind to stay present. And what that kind of did for me was beyond me. And it was incredible. Cause I was just like, it felt like a superpower. And it was just really like, okay, I was just asleep the whole damn time, not focusing on, you know, anything that was right in front of me and just going through the motions. And no wonder, you know, you make careless errors and things like that when you do that, you know, and you're not really your true self, you know. It's crazy, but that book is crazy. It's powerful.
It's wild. And it's so right. It's, you notice that like, I've noticed in the past where it's like, oh, I'm pissed off about something. It's like, well, why am I pissed off about something? It's like, because I'm thinking about it, because I'm hanging on to it. It's like, I am meditating on that anger. I'm concentrating my brain and I'm wasting energy on how pissed off I should be. And I've got this loop of like, I'm angry. I feel like I have been wronged. I feel like I'm angry. And it's just this loop of like, I'm going to be pissed off because I'm pissed off.
Right.
Like if I can just let that go and be like, who cares?
Yeah. It's a valid point. And that book was just like another thing that I got from that was really powerful, is that then you go into, all right, I'm focusing on the present moment. And then you'll realize, oh, I was just thinking about the past. I was just thinking about the future. And you go into like self-judgment mode. And then another profound thing that I found in there is that the second that you realize you're thinking about the past or the future, you're present. That's like, it's a profound thing. Like, you know, it alleviates judgment, you know, of your self-judgment, right? You know, you realize you're thinking about the past or the future, boom, you're no longer thinking about the past or the future. You're present in that very moment. And it's what you do with it. And so I literally now I'm under the impression that everything can be much more simple for me. It's just, if I dedicate all my energy into the moment that I'm in, then it's nearly impossible to fail, because there's no such thing as like, you know, the end result that we project will occur. It's only what we create in a series, like you hit on, of present moments, right? So how can you lose if you're just acting in the present moment? It's just whatever transpires is a result of what I'm doing in this very moment. So
exactly. Exactly. And like I focus on like, and I'm probably not using the word meditate in the proper word, but I'm like, don't meditate on angry. Yeah. Right. And like to me, meditate is like to focus your attention or your energy in a, in a specific direction. So I just try and tell myself like, don't meditate on anger. Don't meditate on hate or jealousy or like any of these things. Cause you're just like, it's just making things worse. You're just doing, I'm just doing myself a disservice. There's a great, the great episode of the Knowledge Project. He did a podcast with Naval, who founded AngelList. And he talked about future planning. And basically it's that sort of thinking about the future and like,
which you have to do, you know,
which you have to do. But then we get into this mode of like, we're having this conversation, we're having this fight in our head. And it's like, well, like, is this really adding any value or do I just need to go talk to this person? Right. Cause I'm planning this future fight. And that it was just the way he described it. Yeah. The words were like, just stop future planning. And I was like, oh yeah, I get it. It's another one of those reminders. Mm-hmm. And if you can just, I'll post a link in the show notes, but I'll shoot you a link after the show here.
Yeah. Thank you.
Cause the last sort of piece of this was like of the power of now is you can free yourself from pain by constantly observing your mind and not judging your thoughts. And so for me, that like, that brought it all home because I was like, okay, I'm future planning. It's like, okay, stop future planning. Oh, I'm such a shithead for future planning. It's like, no. Just like note that you're doing it and then stop and like not passing judgment on, oh, that was a weird thought or like, hey, that happened. Now it's in the past. Right.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, that's like one of the most profound things for it. And it's like, that is why I think it's so important in a sense of like, if you're cold calling, right? What better and more, you know, perfect way to practice these things than with cold calling, right?
It's 100%.
Because you're just going through, it's condensed rejection. It's condensed, you know, successes and failures, but more failures. And it's like, there's no better way than to make yourself more present than practicing these type of ideologies in the context of a cold call or more largely sales in general, right? It's a huge like sport every day that you're just, the whole goal is to put numbers up, right? And those numbers mean something. They mean, you know, somebody's future. They mean, you know, an impact in some way, however an individual defines it. We go through so much to get there. And that's where I think that like those books are like so powerful because it is the key to doing those things and staying happy. And that's why so many people, sales is not for them. Well, there's other reasons, but there's some people, when people say sales isn't for me, it's just because I think, you know, who is anybody? Who am I? Like, how do we know? And it's just one experience that we have to just go through. And not everybody's aspirations are in alignment with sales, but it certainly helps if you kind of experience some of those things. So, I mean, it was life-changing for me. I can just say that.
Totally. I think it's the pressure cooker, right? It's, you can resist against, and you can say, you can come to your cold calling block with the mindset of, fuck, I hate cold calling. This really sucks. Or you can say, and it takes a while to like, when I say cultivate, like you really got to work on this mindset, but just to be grateful for the opportunity to improve my cold calling skills. Mm. Right? You're doing the same thing, but you're approaching it from a totally different mindset. Right. And then it's like every dial, it's an opportunity to learn, opportunity to learn, opportunity to learn. And I remember when I first started saying this, I'm like, Colin, you're so full of shit. And by the end, it's like, Colin, you're still full of shit, but you know what? Actually, maybe there's a little bit of sense to this. And at the very least, then you're not just sitting there, one, dreading your cold calling blocks, two, you're making dials without your heart in it, right? If your heart's not in it and you connect, you're not actually going to turn that into anything. So if your heart's not in it, you may as well not even show up, you know?
Yeah, that's 100% true. It couldn't be more true.
Man, I feel like we could talk about mindset and staying present for, you know, hours and hours here, but I want to be respectful of your time. Yeah, man, I'm happy to have you here. Let's jump to the lightning round. I want to get sort of three quick answers from you, and then we're going to jump into the cold call role play. And I'm
sounds
still
good, man. Let's here. Do it.
Cool, man. So, how do you get people to reply to your emails?
Got to lead with value, right? You know, I think the main thing, for instance, for us, I'll hop on, and I just actually did some cold calls today, just for the heck of it.
Yeah.
I'll go on, like their Facebook business page, leave them a recommendation, right after getting off the phone with them, that is, right? So like their page, leave them a personalized recommendation, tweak out a template, but make it more personalized, lead with value, and leave a question of how we can drive more value than what we've already talked about on that call. And then hopefully that does the trick. And, you know, there's some other like email best practices that you've, I'm sure you've covered before, but I think it's just keeping conscious of the fact that if you do something that actually helps that person's business and you can call attention to that and then show that you're eager to do more if given the opportunity, why wouldn't they respond?
Beautiful. I love that you're doing the pre-work, right? It's not just about sending an email. It's sort of the Kobayashi Maru. It's like, I've already got a reply to the email before I actually send the email. You're sort of breaking the rules there, but I like it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So,
sort of same answer. How do you, when you're on a cold call and you're getting a brush off, you know, where you can tell the person's like, you know what, I'm busy, like kind of leave me alone. How do you handle that?
I completely understand. And that's exactly why I want to help you with this, because it's going to help you save time, right? I know you're busy. So I'm just going to get straight to the point. Here's what we can do for you. We'll create videos to promote you and your listings, be free of charge to start. If you like what we do, we can do business on a month-to-month basis. If not, you get to keep everything that we did. Does that sound fair? And then, you know, if they say no after giving a second objection there, probably not the right person at that time.
That's fair. Love it, man. And then ideally, we don't have to push at the end of the quarter, but sometimes we do. So what do you do when you got to push?
Hit the phones. And I mean that, like, you know, when you're down at the end of the quarter, right, especially in leadership, I think that there's like almost like an allergen to hitting the phones at some point, like, oh, I can't do that anymore. But when it's people are feeling that pressure and your team's feeling that pressure, I think it means something that to get on the phone and help them. So earlier today, there's, you know, a couple people that, you know, were a little bit behind on quota that were out sick. And it's not because anything that they did, it's because they were sick. They got the flu. So to me, I wanted to show them that I cared and not just sit there and be like, you got to hit quota, right? So I'll hop on the phone and book them some demos, fill up their calendar, get them a couple live transfers over. And I think that that does more than any strategy that I could come up with.
Amazing. That's like, I couldn't imagine a sales leader booking some demos for me. That's got to be, you must have the most grateful team.
I think it depends on the day, but they're all great people and they're grateful. And it depends on how on top of my game I am and what we're doing. But in general, I think it's impactful to be able to do something that literally helps somebody versus prescribe solutions by, you know, suggestions.
100%. I love that you're sort of, you lead by living it, which I appreciate about you. So speaking of leading by living it, I want you to cold call me now. So let's put this in context. We're going to give you a chance to promote anything you want. Who are you, like, what do you sell on? Who am I? Who are you selling to?
You're calling a real estate agent or broker from anywhere in the nation.
Cool. Let me get my beeper out.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. and you're doing God knows what. You could be doing anything. You could be showing a property. You could be sitting on your couch telling me that you're showing your property. You could be in the grocery store with your kids. The point is that we call people and we don't know what they're going through in life at that point. So we just got to keep it consistent, tell them what we can do to help their business and see where the cards fall.
All right. Well, let's see where these cards fall, Kyle.
Cool.
All right, man. Ring, ring. Hey, this is Colin. Yeah, this is
Colin. Hey, it's Kyle with Zentap. How are you?
Who?
It's Kyle with Zentap. I actually just found you on realtor.com. I saw this beautiful listing you have here on 123 Main Street. This is still active, right?
Yeah. You interested in seeing the house?
I'm not. Actually, what I am interested in doing, though, is creating a video for that property and then prescribing you a strategy on how we can help you drive that video out to thousands of prospects in your market that may be interested in seeing that property. Does that sound fair?
No, not interested.
I completely understand. And that's probably because I haven't got to the point that I'm not going to ask you for any money. I don't need a credit card from you. Colin, I'm sure you get a lot of calls and we believe in doing business the old fashioned way, which means that we're going to show you the value first for 2 weeks. No commitment on your end. If you like what we do at the end of those 2 weeks, awesome. We have affordable month-to-month solutions. If not, you get to keep everything that we did. Does that sound fair?
Sounds very fair.
Amazing. What's your email address? I'm going to make sure I get this to you in writing.
Beautiful. You got the demo, man. Nice work.
All right.
I like, it was just like a little duck and wave. You didn't phase. I'm like, not interested. You're like, I don't care.
we cheat to acknowledge. I completely understand because we have to understand, you know, if they're not interested, they're not interested. Normally I'll go from that point. And if there's one to two more objections, I'll just let them slide, because we don't want to like annoy people that are truly not in the market. But yeah, we also know that it's impulse to be able, when you get that call, your knee jerk reaction is going to say, I'm not interested, before we even get into it. So if I've gotten through the full shebang and then they still say they're not interested, the most I may do after that on a cold call is ask them why, that's pretty much it. And just see how they answer. And most of the time they hang up, but other times they may give you an answer and there may be something that you can explain how we can drive value to them at that. But yeah.
Love it, man. That was awesome.
Thank you. That was fun.
If where about to be based, by the way, for
Los Angeles, California. Yeah. Zentap. We actually started in 2017. We got a really good team here. I was lucky enough to start out of the back house with all the core members, our CEO and founder, David Duell. He's a Forbes 30 under 30 entrepreneur, really smart guy. He's done this before. Ben, another one of the partners, great guy. My wife actually works here as well. Ben's girlfriend works here as well. And then my buddy, Al Cohen, one of the most disciplined, smartest, intelligent 24, 25 year olds. I can't remember if he had his birthday or not yet, but he's just like ages beyond wherever I was when I was his age. And he's been holding down the fort from the beginning and has worn like multiple different hats. And it's been a pleasure working here. Hasn't always been easy for us, but we've been able to, you know, to get to a pretty good amount of revenue since we got started. So check out zentap.com if you're a real estate professional, or if you want to work here. And if you want to contact me, kyle@zentap.com, I'll respond to your email.
Perfect. Kyle, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Colin, I can't appreciate you enough for having me on, and I love what you guys are doing at Predictable Revenue. And I want to say thank you to Veronica. Aaron Ross is incredible as well. I'm big fans of you guys. Keep doing it. Let me know when we can do this next time. Had a lot of fun.
You betcha. Thanks, Kyle.
Thank you.